The recording has started.
Great, thank you. Let's kick off. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone, wherever you are. This is call number 6 for CCWG Working Party 1 on Community Empowerment. It's our first meeting since the Istanbul event, and we've got a lot of work to do in a short period of time. So our agenda is in front of you in the chat part of the Adobe room. And the first thing that we've got on our agenda is the agenda review. Does anyone have anything that they would like to suggest adding to the agenda besides what is already on it? If so, could you raise your hand and suggest it? That would be handy. I'll just give a few seconds for that to happen. Okay, I see no hands are up. I'm sorry, I just have to walk while holding my laptop while talking for a moment, but I'll see how well I can multitask. The next item is our work plan for the next sprint, and as you have seen, there's a lot of work to do in a relatively short period of time. The nature of that short period of time relates to the fact that at Istanbul we decided that we would try to finish our work for the complete proposal that we're doing by the 20th of April. And as we all know, CCWG has agreed that when it's doing agreement of proposals, it will read everything twice. So the co-chairs and the rapporteurs are in a discussion at the moment about how to manage that, and you can rely on the fact there will be proposals for additional meetings that aren't yet scheduled. At the moment, there are only 6 hours of calls between now and the 20th, and that isn't going to give us time to complete the proposal. So to get our work done in time to allow the stress test working party to stress test our work, we're actually going to have to proceed really quickly. And the way that I'm proposing that we do that in this work plan is to get some drafts ready quite quickly, the bulk of the powers stuff through this weekend, and to have calls on the 8th and 10th for us to have a first look at content in our first reading column, to make any changes that we do, and then to confirm it at a following meeting, and to break our sectional report into two to do that. The kind of powers that we're talking about in the first set, so a first draft of that can be done over this weekend. I've set some time aside to pull the content that we've already written together into a doc. And then, as you can see from the document in front of you, down the bottom there are two items, 6.51 and 6.6, which would just happen a little bit later. We think it's too early, I think, to really finalize the call about the mechanism. We're clearly going to need some more legal advice. And the reason I've pushed the AOC stuff a little bit off is because I just didn't want to try and do all of the concentration and drafting in one piece. So on this timetable, we would have meetings on the 8th of April, on the 10th of April, and on the 13th of April. So unless I've completely confused myself, that would involve meetings on Wednesday the 8th, Friday the 10th, and Monday the 13th. Now, there is no good way to do this. We can do doodle polls to find times where this is workable, but I recognize it's a sprint. And my basic perspective is that the sooner we're actually reading and talking about the text that would go in our report, the better. I have to say that there's some uncertainty with the discussion with the CCWG co-chairs and the other rapporteurs. I've gotten in first as the first of the working parties to propose a work plan like this. Hopefully that counts for something. And don't see how we could possibly give content any earlier than this. But we may need to do some later work if there's any further development that comes out of the CCWG calls when they're scheduled. So the basic structure or approach that would arise from that is that I'd be looking for a few volunteers. My basic intention is to do the drafting of this in a Google document, which my proposal is that whoever is interested in doing some detailed review, helping tweak language, helping make sure that the concepts are faithfully represented from what we've done, because this is a summary drafting task, this isn't an inventive drafting task, can volunteer themselves, and I can include them in the Google Doc over this Easter holiday weekend in New Zealand and some other places. We can finalize a draft piece of content by close of Whai UTC on the 6th, Monday the 6th, and then send it out to the working party for review and discussion at a call on Wednesday. And so the volunteers for that part, I don't think we need to do any other find down volunteer work, but after we've got the draft call content, there may be a need for the specific drafters to pick up bits and improve it, to change, or if we have in our discussions views that require revising, we may need to broaden that team out. But the main piece of work for the whole working party will be to review the text, to make sure it's faithful to the discussions we've had, to make sure it sets out the options as clearly as possible. So that's our focus now. I'm sure I've seen on an email list a volunteer for helping do that first drafting job, and it is. It's Keith Dryzak, who's already said they will do that. The question then, I guess, is two questions. Does anyone want to comment on what's in front of you on the screen and what I've described? And are there any sort of fundamental difficulties with this approach or different ones to propose? So that's the first question. I don't have hands up. So the next question I'd ask is there anyone else on the call tonight or this morning or whatever time, who would like to sit in some intensive review and drafting work over the next 4 or 5 days? The two volunteers that I've got at the moment are Keith Dryzak and Robin Gross. And don't feel obliged to this if you're just interested in keeping an eye on it, because you'll get access to all of the content on Monday. You just won't have to watch the painful process of the origination of it. If you want to volunteer, if you want to think about it and then decide, it's completely open. It doesn't harm anyone to add more people to the Google Doc. So my advice would be to just let me know about it, and I'll add you. I'm not going to form the Google Doc until tomorrow, so it's at least 24 hours away. Are there any other comments about the work plan then, or shall we move on to the next agenda item? Just leave you a few seconds to put up a hand if you've got something to add. And while you're doing that, I'll just say that I will keep talking with the co-chairs about the schedule, about when they can expect work from us, if there's something that comes up in the broader CCWG's work planning that affects our timetable. I'll let you know as soon as possible. And I'll ask the ICANN staff to organize some doodle polls as quickly as possible for those meeting slots. Certainly for the Friday UTC one, we would aim for early in the day UTC so as not to disrupt people's social commitments and weekend commitments. I don't see any hands up, so we will move on to the next item. And this is a challenging thing to discuss. I put it on the agenda in terms of the mechanism because it would be helpful if, in starting to do some drafting work for this report, we can have a sense of any consensus in the group about where to focus our development work and on where to ask for further legal advice. I think the initial memo from Adler does propose a different sort of mechanism, which is a very large board of directors for ICANN with a smaller executive committee and a lot of the powers being vested in those boards. I don't know where we're going to go with the development of that. Maybe someone on this call now who was on the second legal call, which finished a few minutes ago, who could give us some context about where the legal advice is going on this before we get into the detail of the question about where people are feeling. Keith, Edward, I think I have feelings for some reason that both of you might have been on that call. Is there anyone who could volunteer to give us a little update on that? If there is, could you put your hand up? Ah, Greg, who of course was on it, this person. Greg, you give us that talk.
Well, I think to be fair, the second legal call primarily dealt with process rather than substance in terms of how we are going to work with the lawyers going forward and how the lawyers are going to work with each other in order for us to get the best advantage out of the expertise of each firm. So we didn't really discuss, which proposal or which, community empowerment mechanism would be preferable. And I think the lawyers would probably tell us that they're all viable and that we need to figure out, ideally in concert with the lawyers, which one kind of best fits ICANN's way of working, that fits the multi-stakeholder mentality, offers the right tools and working methods going forward. But one of the things we discussed on the call is to get the lawyers closer to the working parties. So initially there had been kind of an emphasis on written questions being gathered and sent on to the legal committee, who would kind of rationalize them and send them on to the lawyers, who would then return answers. We've progressed beyond that thinking, and the idea is to try to get the lawyers onto some of the working party calls, get the lawyers the actual templates that are being worked on, the actual documents where the decisions are being made. So I think the idea is to get the lawyers more involved. And also, as between the two firms, trying to find the right balance in terms of how they'll collaborate and how we'll interface with them. And I think that Sidley Austin is going to take kind of the coordinating role, but as between the counsel, both firms will have the ability to give full voice, from their respective experiences and expertise. But ultimately, Sidley will kind of make sure that things get arranged correctly. So that's a long way of saying that there's no answer to your question, but also that there is, I think, a better path forward for getting an answer to that question. So one of the things that's incumbent on this working party to do is to put together whatever packet of document or documents should go back to the lawyers. It could be with accompanying questions. That's the other thing. The questions were kind of becoming free-floating and not really attached to particular proposals or events or discussions. They lost context, and therefore they were more difficult to answer because they had become abstract. The questions need to be brought back to the templates and back to the work of the working party. You guys, us guys, are really the client, and the coordinating person, the rapporteur is in essence the lead client or the coordinating client, with the client, the legal sub-team, providing the conduit. So again, need to think of what do we want to get the lawyers and how do we want to get the lawyers or a lawyer from the lawyers onto one of these calls to actually thrash these things out. You know, it's a collaborative, even intimate process of working with the lawyers, and it's not going to be done by mail order. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Greg. I think that's good to hear, that I had not paid a lot of attention to the list of questions precisely because it did seem so detached from what we were trying to do. That leaves me thinking that the best approach for us is actually to simply concretize our proposals as much as we can and then get the lawyers to come on the call and describe any issues that they have with where we've got to and to propose fixes or changes if they think those are advisable. Having that closer relationship is really important. So we can move then on, I think, to the substance of the question here, which is that we've got kind of three classes of mechanisms that we've been talking about for exercising these powers. One is a group of people organized within the bylaws. The other is some kind of group of people organized within the California law requirements for members or delegates. And the third is not to have a group of people, but simply to have processes that flow. I'm happy to say what my personal preference is, which is that we do have a group of people. I think it would be terrible for our overall accountability if we said that overall calls about big questions are simply being discussed individually in the SOs and ACs and decisions made that way. And because I'm a slight conservative in terms of the organization and the degree of changes that we should be pitching for in Work Stream 1, my instinct is that something along the lines of the permanent CCWG or community council is easier to do. And so that's my kind of not very strongly held preference between that and the membership/delegate model, recognizing that we don't have yet, but we'll have to have in the next week or two, clear legal perspectives on that. So my personal preference is that as we work up our report, and remember, I'm not suggesting we get draft text out on this for almost another week, that we do go for some kind of mechanism like that. So having stuck my neck out there, ready for my head to be chopped off, I would ask other people what their perspectives is on this. We need to test whether we have a common view or different views or no consensus at all, and if in any case we'll then work out how to play. So if you'd like to add something to that, either in the chat or verbally, I would welcome you to do so. And Greg, I see that your hand is still up. I don't know if it's still up or if it's newly up. It's oldly up. Robin says in the chat that she thinks we need legal advice and some understanding of it before we have a draft text. I have to say for the record that I don't agree with that. I think we need to have some idea of what we want and then test those ideas with the lawyers rather than asking the lawyers to generally canvass the pros and cons of all of these options and then come back to us with a recommendation. I'd rather the two moved in parallel, personally. Greg, a new hand. Greg, you go, and then Robin is next.
Yeah, I understand Robin's concern. I think this is a chicken and egg kind of question, and it's an iterative process. But I think that, you know, given where we are and how long we've been working, I think that we should concretize our proposal. I think we should make sure that the lawyers understand kind of what the variables are and even the big alternatives that we're working with. I think it still would be a good idea to have something to put in front of them rather than, you know, in whatever shape it's in, rather than, you know, but at the same time, I wouldn't go too far. So it's really a balancing act here. So I don't think we just kind of put down our pens and schedule a call with the lawyers, but yet we don't kind of try to work things too finely or completely without going to the lawyers because they may start, making significant changes in our thinking or helping us come to significant changes in our own thinking based on what they're telling us. So I'm not inside the work of this team enough to know exactly where that magic balance point is between having an ill-defined mass that's too unformed to show the lawyers and having an overly worked mass where there's going to be a lot of wasted effort because the lawyers should have been called earlier. But it's that we have to look for that tipping point wherever it is. Thanks.
Can I just also add that if you take another look at what's on the screen in front of you in terms of what we need to do, for the mechanism, we're kind of restricted to a two or three paragraph intro of purpose and mechanism, summary of the recommendations, and key design features. So let's be really clear here that what we aren't going to need to do, because remember that we've agreed that this first consultation isn't going to be the only one, that we're going to do two consultations with the community. And so we don't need to come up with things like the exhaustive detail about how any of these models would work. And I don't think we need to feel that we can't put up more than one option. But in the drafting sense, I'm just trying to avoid drafting up those paragraphs about all three, about the SOAC processes, about members, delegates, and so on. So having rudely interrupted, Robin, you've got your hand up, so please go ahead. You're on mute or something, Robin. We can't hear you. We still can't hear you, Robin. I don't know what's on with your audio. Okay, Robin, you keep trying, and when we hear you, we'll flick back to you. Keith has made the point in the chat that we're good about the powers. We need to really develop the most effective, efficient, and simple way to implement them. A few people have said plus one to that. Ed has made some comments. I think that Greg's noted the council not contemplated under CA law. I think the thing is that a lot of the innovations in the ICANN bylaws aren't necessarily contemplated under California law, but they work and they are there now. Look, it would be perfectly reasonable for us to say, given that we have suggested staggered drafting for this mechanism, I'm cool if the consensus of us here now is that we don't have enough information to make a call about this today, that we should focus our drafting work on getting those powers set out in the first draft, and then to organize a conversation with the lawyers on that 8th of April call where the specific item is, hey, you've got the powers that we need and you're a bit across where the other parts of this work are up to. Do you have any more of an instinct now about the best way to do that? And that would then save me the time to do much drafting on this. Are people happy with that as an approach? Still haven't heard a whisper out of Robin. People seem pretty happy with that approach anyhow, so it doesn't compromise anything, it doesn't risk anything. So I think we'll just... sorry, just trying to find out why we can't hear Robin. Does anyone have anything else to add on this point? Because people seem pretty content there. I see one of the staff is writing those. So. Robin, are you happy with this? Can you give us a chat indication one way or the other? Because we can move on to the next agenda item if we're happy to not make a call about this. Okay, thank you. And good luck joining the audio for what's coming up. Right, but then I'm just going to sum up the consensus there that in this first tranche of drafting, we're not going to be focusing on the mechanism, that the Working Party doesn't think it has the information to come to a consensus. And we would like to have a lawyer on the call on the 8th to have that as a lead item of the discussion. And we will, on that basis, move on to the next agenda item. If Robin has something to add burning on this one, when she gets on the audio, we'll come back to it. The next item on the agenda, turning to item 4, is the Stress Test 18 paper. And I'm just going to try and bring it up in front of me. Steve is not able to be on the call today. He's stuck on a plane, which is unfortunate. You'll recall that this item came out of discussions of stress tests around government influence in ICANN and the impact that that might have on the transition. And we've had some indications from NTIA that that will be an issue in terms of the process. Sorry, Matthew, I'm just going to respond to your question in the chat. The process in terms of getting to the point where we want legal advice is to do the drafting work that we've already agreed to do on fleshing out what the powers are in terms of language for this consultation, and then asking the lawyers for a conversation on Wednesday about the best mechanism to deliver that. And they already have access to the powers documentation that's there. They'll have a refined version of the text and maybe some greater understanding of the various models that we've proposed. So I will write to the lawyers after this call in sometime in the next 24 hours, outlining our desire for them to be on that call and what we would need from them there and what they should look at in prepping for it. So if we come back to what's in front of us, and if staff could note that as an action point for me, sorry, to write to the lawyers with a request for their input on the 8th of April call, that would be good because I'm not going to remember to them. So back to the document that's in front of us. Steve has put that out. It sort of goes through the stress test, which I think many of us are familiar with. There have been some adjustments to the proposed wording compared with the powers template that I had done earlier on. And if you scroll to the top of page 2 of this paper from Steve, you can see that it adds a sentence to the bylaw or a phrase. So as to say that where GAC advice is supported by consensus. So in all of these matters, no one has suggested changing the way GAC decides how it operates. No one is trying to preclude the GAC deciding in some point in the future to change how it defines consensus. But people are saying that if they were to choose to give advice that wasn't any way related to consensus, but was only by, for instance, majority voting, that the part of bylaw K, the end of bylaw J and K as on the screen, the need to try and find a mutually acceptable solution to disagreements would only apply to consensus advice. Now, the co-chairs have asked for feedback from GAC on that, and that feedback is individual from Thomas Schneider and has said that in the document. And the Danish GAC and Spanish GAC reps' inputs is documented there. And the NTIA one is there in that document. So if you scroll down to the last page, Steve does propose a path forward. It is important, I think, to note that we need to come to a judgment about how to deal with a stress test on its merits, and being really clear that within, as with any other proposed power or change that we're doing, we are creating a package for the CCWG to look at and endorse or not endorse. We are not trying to ask individual SOs and ACs to approve in detail each recommendation or to not approve each recommendation. So we still need at this point to be focused on the merits of the question. So Steve's recommendation or path forward is that we do go ahead with proposing that. So the first question is, assuming that everyone has read this proposal and paper and has thought about this issue, is to just test what people's views are, because I would be comfortable for us, I don't think any scone is one of our community powers, but it is useful to have discussed it here, and based on whatever conclusion that we come to, I'm happy to write to the CCWG and just summarize that for the ongoing conversation. So I'll take a speaking list. Does anyone want to offer an opinion or a view about this? Well, this is an excited speaking list. I just am so flooded with hands, I don't know what to do. For the transcript, that's said in an ironic tone of voice, because there is no speaking list. I can offer my opinion if you like, if that might get some debate going. I could offer my opinion if I was. I don't have a firm view on this. First of all, second of all, for my view is that this is a useful clarification to put in mind, because related to the transition or not, I don't know that none of the other SOs and ACs, through changes their internal procedure, can change their level of influence in ICANN decision making. I think that the concerns that have been expressed to me about GAC members in respect of wanting to avoid any single country being able to impose a veto on GAC advice is actually not foreclosed by the wording that Steve has proposed, because it doesn't define the first draft of this amendment that I did imported the language from the GAC operating principles. But this proposal at the top of page 2 doesn't define consensus the same way as GAC currently does. So if the GAC had a rough consensus approach, it would arguably still be bound to cause this process for the board to follow. That would deal with the veto problem. Having had an indication from the NTIA that this needs to be tackled, I don't think we should ignore that, while of course not trying to argue or assert in any way that the NTIA should be able to veto or require specific mechanisms here. I'm comfortable with the proposal, and I think that we should keep discussing it in the CWG, personally. I don't know if that was a very good pump priming. Oh, there's a hand up. Greg, go ahead.
Thanks. Greg Chatton, for the record. I think this is a classic stress test, and there's absolutely no it's unavoidable. And the issue here, it has nothing to do with interfering with the GAC's ability to change its consensus level or create a different kind of advice that's based on simple majority or random groupings of countries making statements. The point is, what happens then? How does that fit in with the current bylaw? Does the bylaw offer the flexibility for the board to react differently to different pieces of GAC communication? And right now, the way it's drafted, I tend to say no, it doesn't. It kind of presupposes that the GAC will make its decision, you know, based on GAC consensus, and that therefore it will be, in essence, worthy of the board's deference. But there's no kind of if A then B sort of. There's only a single stream of how the board can react to the GAC, so it does not differentiate. So it's really not about the GAC at all. It's about how the rest of the world deals with the GAC doing things differently. And I think I thought the U.S. GAC rep, Susan Riddell, had also weighed in some way on this, or was going to. I think that this is absolutely key, and it's only, I think, by kind of misunderstanding that there's been any real friction with the GAC on this, maybe a misunderstanding about what we were saying. We're not tying the GAC's hands. We're just saying to the GAC that if you serve us steak, we'll react differently than if you serve us hamburger. And that's completely logical. We're not actually saying that. They're just saying that we may need to contemplate that, and we may need to change that. So that's the beginning of a stress test. But it also, right now, I think we'd fail that stress test based on the current bylaw. I'd seen Keith, big A advice, little A advice, minuscule A advice, could all be there. But only big A advice should get the current level of deference that's in the bylaws. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. I mean, I've had a chat with our local GAC rep about this as well, and she raised a scenario where there's a piece of public policy advice that the GAC wants to give on a very, like, a regional issue or something. And where that happens, most GAC members don't care. At the moment, a couple of GAC members might care, some advice might be issued that most aren't engaged with, no one objects to, and that's fun. And that should be taken as GAC consensus advice today, would be taken as GAC consensus advice tomorrow, and the reconciliation process would work. Our change wouldn't affect that. It's if there's a big contentious issue and the GAC was seriously split, I think that's the kind of situation which today the GAC wouldn't offer any advice on. And if at any point in the future its processes changed so that it did, that would be the kind of situation where this would happen. But I really think, as Finn has noted, there hasn't been a GAC discussion on this topic yet, and we are not presenting final proposals for the community to endorse until after Buenos Aires for the ICANN meeting in Dublin to sign off on. So there's plenty of time for this discussion to happen. So everyone seems to agree in the chat and discussion so far with the general approach that's being suggested of A, we're not saying we should take this off the table, so we think it should be advanced in discussion, and we're pretty comfortable with the notion that it's about making sure that when the board has to do the reconciliation process, it's based on a consensus advice from the GAC. So if I can leave that summary there on the table and ask if anyone has a radically different agreement or view. Greg, your hand, I think, is your old hand, so I'm going to assume that you don't have a radically different view to the one you just expressed moments ago. I think we can probably move on then to the next agenda item, and I'll write to CWG CCWG and just sort of outline where we got to on that. No, you can't change your mind now, Greg. You have to wait for the next call for that. Okay, our next agenda then is item 5, which is on the matter of individual board member recall. Now, the reason that I put this on the agenda was that we had discussions when I first drafted the template about board recall. It talks about doing both individual board members and the whole board. We got focused on the whole board as a core accountability mechanism, but anyone who participated in the discussions in Istanbul and has read all the legal advice presented to the CWG and the CCWG does get the sense, I think, that individual board member recall is a more normal way to deal with board failure. In other words, that if the only way to deal with a problematic director or decisions that are disagreed with is to remove the whole board, that isn't a very effective accountability mechanism. So given that we had done some work on the recall of individual board members, what I was really seeking with this agenda item is a discussion about whether we should reincorporate the removal of individual board members into the set of powers that we're recommending at this point. I've been of the view that we could either leave it or take it. Personally, if we can do things in Workstream 1, I would prefer that we did. I noticed that Robin has just said that on the call, on the chat, and so has Matthew. Not because we don't think we should have an option for the whole board being recalled, but because individual control is important. So if we were going to proceed on that, and I'm not taking that for granted yet, we'll have a discussion in a minute. The way that I was thinking of kind of wording that would be that at the moment, I think a majority of our ICANN directors are appointed by SOs and ACs and so on. And so the recall power would be an individual one for them. In other words, that we'd need to develop a process for the appointing bodies to remove the directors that have been appointed. A slightly more complicated situation is what to do about directors appointed by the NomCom. And the one immediate response might be that the people who should be able to remove NomCom directors is the NomCom. And that would make the NomCom into a NomCom and a D-NomCom, which I don't think was contemplated in the creation of the NomCom or anything like that. So, Cisneros pointed out helpfully that my numbers were slightly wrong. 7 ICANN directors appointed by SOs, ACs, 8 by the NomCom, and the CEO is a director as well, appointed by the board. So, one of the things we could do is ask the lawyers. Edward asks, should we assume there will be a NomCom? Given there have been no proposals to not have a NomCom, Edward, I think we should assume that, but I'm open to hearing other points of view. So could we just do a speaking list on this subject? You might want to focus on whether we should have this power here at all. At the moment, I haven't seen anyone said that we shouldn't try and do this in Workstream 1. Secondly, if you have a different view about SOAC appointments being versed by anyone other than SOACs. Thirdly, what your view is about how to deal with NomCom appointees. So, speaking list, anyone like to put their hands up among the magnificent 16 of you? Now, I don't mind if people don't talk, if they just want to say things in the chat, but the option is there to put up your hand and make a verbal comment as well. I do notice that Cheryl is on the call, and Cheryl has been involved with the NomCom for some time. And just in the interest of sparking up some discussion, Cheryl, I wonder if you've got a perspective on the question about if one was going to have a removal process for NomCom-selected directors, what role the NomCom might have in that. Have you got an opinion on that? Oh, Greg's got his hand up. Greg, why don't you talk to us while we see if Cheryl will talk to us?
I will not attempt to imitate Cheryl. It'd just be a pale, shallow replacement or substitute. In any case, I think, you know, clearly, to my mind, the NomCom are kind of like, you know, free, you know, non-appointed in a sense. They're not representative, and therefore they're not kind of tied to a specific designator, as the SOAC seats are. So you could either do one of two things, one of which I think is ludicrous. One is to say that the NomCom can spill the NomCom related folks, but I don't think that's the way the NomCom is even constituted properly to do such a thing. So I think that since they are there kind of for the community as a whole, they should be, in essence, fair game for a spillage or a recall, or to put them in the tumbril and wheel them toward the guillotine based on supermajority rule. At least I'll throw that out for consideration. And yes, I would assume there's going to be a NomCom.
Okay, thank you, Greg. So I think if I was to paraphrase or slightly reword your proposal, it would be that NomCom appointees wouldn't be removed by the NomCom, but could be removed by the community mechanism, short of removing the whole board, so that would be a power that the whole community had. Is that?
I'm not so much thinking about having the NomCom appointees removed en masse. I don't think they act en masse. But rather whether you could remove a NomCom appointee. I mean, I would not want the non-contracted parties house appointees removed by the contracted parties house or by the ALAC. That seems a little bit, that could get insanely political. So I think if you're a designated board member, I have real concerns about you being able, about any removal rights to anything other than the designators for that board member. But as for the NomCom reps, you know, either singly or much more rarely en masse, you know, should be removed by a community mechanism. I mean, I don't know what other mechanisms there are under proposal other than having them removed by the NomCom itself. Clearly, they can't be removed by some small minority mechanism. Otherwise, it'd just be fair game on board members if any small minority could remove, you know, just about any board member. Interested in other thoughts.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. Thanks, Greg. Phil, next.
Yeah, Phil Corwin for the record. Just want to chime in. While they may be selected by a different process, once a NomCom selected board member joins the board, they no longer are there to represent whatever SOA or AC they came from. They get the same, I don't want to say indoctrination, they get the same briefing from ICANN legal staff about their duties and their responsibilities when they join the board, and about their primary duty being to ICANN, the organization, rather than the community. So I don't see any reason why a board member selected by the NomCom shouldn't be subject to the same potential removal mechanism as any other board member.
Can I just clarify that? I think, we're contemplating two things here. One is that the community mechanism would be able to spill the whole board, setting aside what that community mechanism is. And I don't think anyone's arguing with that power being implemented. The second thing is what to do about individual directors. And one option for those appointed by the NomCom is that you could make the community mechanism able to remove them, because the purpose of their appointment through the NomCom is to work for ICANN on behalf of the whole community, not to represent any SOAC. An alternative to that for the whole community mechanism would be for the NomCom itself to be able to remove members that it appointed, but I think that there are some difficulties with that model. And then the next question is, what do you do about directors who are appointed by SOs ACs? They are indeed told that once they're appointed, they have the whole corporation's responsibilities at risk. The legal advice, my reading of it, it suggests that where a director has been appointed by SOs designators, which is essentially what happens today, that it's those people who can most easily remove them. So I hadn't heard any particular controversy about that up until this point. There's another question, which is whether the whole community mechanism should also be able to remove directors appointed by SOs ACs. But that isn't yet entirely clear. I haven't heard anyone suggest that so far. So let's keep talking on this. Who else has got a view here? The silence is silent. Okay, well, I think there's definitely consensus that individual removal is important. I think there's consensus that individual removal of any type of director, presumably excluding the CEO and president, should be available. I think that we don't yet have consensus about who should be able to remove non-com appointed directors. And I'd like to suggest that we have consensus, or at least the initial draft view, that the only group that should be able to remove SOAC appointed directors is the appointing SOAC. So if I could test that consensus, only SOACs can remove SOACs. We want individual removal of non-com, but we don't know how. Are people comfortable with that as a writing brief for me to write up the detail? And can staff make sure that's reflected in the notes, please? Okay, Greg's hand is up. Yep, fire away, Greg.
Again, not to get too down into the details, but we have to, for the GNSO, we have to go below the SOAC level to the to the House level, because there are four representatives. Two are appointed by the contracted party's House, which is the registries and the registrars, and two are appointed by the non-contracted party's House, those jolly Siamese twins, the commercial stakeholders group and the non-commercial stakeholders group. So we wouldn't want the non-contracted parties house trying to spill the contracted parties house board member. That would be against the spirit of this, though it would be jolly good fun. Thank you.
Okay, yep, I could have added SC to my words before. Okay, that gives us some guidance to be going ahead with, and remember, as with all these things, it isn't final decisions that are being made here. Greg, I'm assuming that one's the old hand that you just spoke from, so I'm going to propose that we move on to the next agenda item, which is the AOC reviews update. Now, I know that Steve had circulated an updated document from regarding SOACs, and I'm just trying to find it, but maybe the staff have it and could put it on the screen. Yes, this is the right paper. Now, I'm a naughty rapporteur. I haven't absorbed the content of this paper yet, but this is an evolution of the work that was done before Istanbul and is now updated with the feedback that happened there. So I've got a question, and the question is there anyone on the call who participated in the preparation of this who would like to speak to it? Matthew says he does not. Does anyone else have the ability to speak to this? I'm not seeing any hands racing up here, so I'm going to. I apologize for not having read through it myself. As I scroll through the paper on the screen, I'm not immediately seeing any particular recommendations that leap out to me. But as I recall, there was an issue. What I mean is I don't see a sentence saying I recommend that we adopt what's in this paper. I don't mean that there aren't recommendations in it. To be honest, folks, I don't know exactly how we should deal with this. I'm tempted to say that we should just hold fire on it and on our next call when Steve is back, we would be able to discuss this in more depth, and that in terms of the drafting stuff, these AOC things, I wasn't proposing to get draft text out in the first tranche, but in the second one anyway. So we have time to take that approach. Are people happy with doing so? Greg, your hand is up.
First, a question. When you say first tranche, what are your tranches? Jordan. And secondly, one issue that has been that has been batted around a bit with regard to specific AOC is I think it's Section 8, which relates to the jurisdiction of ICANN being in the United States, and some discussions about whether one could put in some sort of aspirational statement about the ideal nature of the jurisdiction of ICANN, and I think that question is being certified to the lawyers. My personal professional opinion is that's not appropriate stuff for bylaws, especially since the Articles of Incorporation select the jurisdiction for the organization, which doesn't mean that it can't stay in the affirmation of commitments. I guess one of the overarching questions here, and I'm not sure that I have the answer, when we talk about moving AOC commitments in, is there going to be a leftover AOC that consists of all the things that haven't made it into the bylaws? I've been kind of assuming yes. And question, you know, what that kind of document should look like and who should be agreeing to that. But if the rest of the AOC is just dying off, then that, you know, is kind of a different kettle of fish. But in any case, I think that... affirmation of commitments number 8 probably, to avoid further controversy, doesn't really need to be moved in to the into the bylaws. You know, they could just stay in the AOC. That's, you know, my 2 cents. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Greg. If I could just say on the point about whether the AOC is going to vanish, I haven't heard anyone say that ICANN or the NTIA plan to bring it to an end. I think what we're responding to is the fact that either party can to an end in the 30 days notice, and so there may be aspects of the AOCs either in the principles, values side of things, which Becky's working party is dealing with, or in terms of the reviews that it requires, that people feel should be moved away from a discretionary agreement and into the bylaws. How that interacts with the ongoing existence of the AOC is the question. The proposals that some have made over the years that ICANN should sign a similar AOC with more governments is a different issue too. I don't think that is been fully canvassed. So I missed a little bit of what you said at the beginning as well, Greg. My apologies for that. Keith, go ahead.
Hey, thank you, Jordan. Keith Drazik. So I just wanted to respond to Greg's comment about affirmation of commitment number 8, the location of ICANN headquarters. And I, at the risk of sounding like a broken record, you know, I'm going to reiterate what I said in Istanbul and what I said on the list in an email back on March 5th. And I think I may have said something again on the recent call, is that during Fadi's February 25th testimony before the Senate committee, he went out of his way to tell Senator Thune in response, and this was in response to the letter that Thune and Rubio had sent to Steve Crocker back in July 2014, that he fully expected that the jurisdictional question and that the affirmation of commitment obligations would be incorporated into the bylaws. So that expectation has been set, and I'm concerned that if we, as a group, as a work party or as a CCWG, decide that that's not in our scope, then we risk leaving something out that could become an obstacle to a successful transition down the road. At the end of this process, you know, NTIA and Fadi and others are going to have to go and present this to Congress and to sell it and to defend it. And if this is missing at that point, I think we're in big trouble. And so I understand the political sensitivities of, you know, incorporating or importing that AOC obligation into the bylaws at this time. I know that there are folks who are uncomfortable with that. But the fact is that, the expectation has been set. And I think it is something that the CCWG needs to deal with in Workstream 1. How it's addressed is certainly still an open question. But I really do think that we need to make sure that we're not missing this or, you know, intentionally saying that it should be part of Workstream 2 if that's not the political reality. So apologies again for reiterating this again and again. Thanks.
Thank you, Keith. Can someone do me a favor and just point to me where in the document in front of us this item is? Is it in this document in front of us? And if so, where is it? Just having technomy is going to be easier. If no one can help on that front, then that's fine. Page 4. No, look. Look, this discussion did get picked up in the CCWG in terms of the jurisdiction, location, commitments, and questions. I'm gonna call a pass on that one for the purpose of this call and suggest that we need to keep that discussion going in the CCWG because it is a core question about how to reconcile those two conflicting desires. Thanks, Phil. See you later. So I realize that's a bit of a hostile pass, but I don't see any other way for us to deal with that at this point. We do need a group-wide consensus on the CCWG about how to proceed with this. I see some hands up. Keith's is an old hand, I think. If that is the case, we'll have Matthew. If Keith's is a new hand, yeah, there you go. Matthew, go ahead.
Yeah, Jordan, can you hear me?
Very quietly.
Okay, I just wanted to note, as I did in the chat, that this discussion of jurisdiction came up on the call, the CCWG call, and I wasn't on that call, but the notes from that call show the discussion, and it seems to me that the The conclusion, which I'm happy to read out, says discussion whether to incorporate Article 8 from the AOC still generates questions. Still in agreement that our goal is to enhance ICANN's accountability, and therefore the topic of jurisdiction comes into scope when a requirement we have for accountability cannot be achieved within California jurisdiction. Based on potential requirements that could not be achieved in Workstream 1, the jurisdiction issue might be pursued within Workstream 2. But you can read the edited notes on that email.
Okay, thanks for that, Matthew. Okay, so it is being discussed in the CCWG. It will continue to do so. I don't think we need to act on it other than if the drafting that I do to summarize all this up, I can identify it as a specific issue for future discussion in that and put a box around it so that attention is very clearly drawn to it. And that probably suffices for working out how to deal with that, I think, because the point is to make sure we don't lose it. I don't think we need to make a decision about that matter. So, as Matthew says, note it's under discussion in the CCWG, and we can refer to that conversation already. So, if people are happy to, we'll leave that agenda item there. I'm assuming that's an old hand from you, Matthew. Which takes us a little bit ahead of time to our last item, which is next calls. As was discussed in the spreadsheet, we do need to have some more calls on this evil sprint that we're doing from here through to the end of the getting the proposal out. I wonder if the staff could just pop the work plan item back up on the screen, the chart that we had at the start of this call. As you'll see there, we had meetings mentioned for the 8th, 10th, and 13th. I think these don't clash any proposed or current meetings of the CCWG. So my proposal is that on Wednesday, the 8th of April, it's not Wednesday, is it? Yeah, it is on Wednesday, the 8th of April, we proceed at our normal time at 2100 UTC. And my proposal is that on the 10th, we do a doodle poll for some time early on Friday the 10th UTC. And just get as much consensus as we can about when that would be, and that we do the same thing for a meeting on the 13th. So that would be 2100 UTC for 90 minutes on Wednesday the 8th of April, and then we would do doodle polls for the two subsequent meetings on the Friday the 10th and Monday the 13th. Making sure that they were early UTC for the Friday the 10th and late UTC for Monday the 13th. And they would both be 90-minute calls as well. I feel like that will be enough, given this is dealing with the wording of summaries of material. It's not originating thinking. But that we might put... Do people think we should diary them for 2 hours but aim for them to be 90 minutes just in case we need the extra time? Are there any views on that? I'd rather block out the time and then not need it than try and scramble for extra time later. Does anyone have a view about that? Matthew says that we should plan on extra time with the legal advisors. I think that's a reasonable point. If on that Wednesday the 8th meeting we're dealing with legal advisors and looking at our draft text in the first cut, yeah, I'd like to propose actually that Wednesday the 8th of April call is 2 hours and that we aim to be 90 minutes for the other two. And so if the staff could take an action to just check in with me about time availability for the two latter meetings and we can work out a number of options on those dates that might work. And we'll get that doodle poll out hopefully before the Easter break begins. If there are any objections to that course of action, please raise hands. Otherwise, we've come to our any other business agenda item. Are there any other matters to raise on this call? No hands are up. No one is typing in the... Oh, Greg, there you go.
Just a interesting thing that occurred to me, and I'll leave people to think about it or not. The other two communities that are involved in the IANA transition process have submitted proposals, of course. And while their proposals are fairly high level at this point, I think one or both of them contemplate possible ICANN bylaws changes. So it may be that we're going to have to rationalize or harmonize potential changes that we might propose with potential changes the other communities might propose. Just something to keep an eye on. And that, you know, even though the CCWG isn't as completely, you know, a creature of the IANA transition as the CWG is, that for, you know, much of this Workstream 1 type of work, we're not the only group contemplating changes to the same thing.
Thanks, Greg. I think that's useful for us to keep in mind with all of our work, that as the ICG does some work on unifying the proposals from all three communities, there may be more stuff that comes through. I'm relying on the members of the CCWG from those communities. You know, I know that we've got reps from the protocols, from the numbers folks here, and I'm hoping we've got some protocol involvement too or some outreach, but it is an important thing to keep in mind. Matthew mentions in the chat that we need to make a recommendation on the AOC and whether or not it, by which he means, I think, the current agreement between NTIA and ICANN will remain in place in some form, or whether we're trying to totally remove the need for it through our bylaws changes. I think that is a topic for us to discuss at some point in the future, in the near future. Okay, if there are no other items for general business, we will wrap this call now a little bit early, along with thanks to everyone for your participation today. I'm looking forward to getting to grips with some text drafting and having something out to you all to look at by the close of today on Monday. And on we go with our work and our lives. So thanks, everyone, and we'll call the call closed. See you later.
And that concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.